No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote.
Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People Their Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. I'm joined by my co-host, Kathleen Gomez, and together we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. Yesterday, I attended the 50th anniversary of the March on Washington, and today we're going to discuss the current state of civil rights in America, especially in Washington, where we are denied even our basic right to representation. We hope that you will call in and join the discussion. We also have with us today two special guests, Janet and Norm Brown, who were at the original march in 1963. Before we get started, let me introduce my co-host, Kathleen Gomez, who joins us from the great state of Arizona. Hi, Kathleen. As always, thanks for helping get the conversation started.
Hello, Senator, and to the audience, I'm Kathleen Gomez. Welcome to Shadow Politics. Today, we want to have a conversation with you all, and so I'd like to give you the number to call in. It's 888-429-5471, or you can Skype us at bbsradio2.com. Really like to hear from the audience after you listen to our two guest speakers what you think has happened in 50 years. It's hard to believe that it's been 50 years because I remember, everybody remembers the march. But that is a lot of time. That's half a century. And so it's going to be interesting to see what people's opinions are. So let us know what you think. Again, 888-429-5471.
Thanks, Kathleen. Yesterday was the 50th anniversary on the March on Washington, which was one of the largest political rallies for human rights in American history, and it's where, of course, Dr. Martin Luther King delivered his most famous speech, his historic I Have a Dream speech. It was a beautiful day here in Washington, and we are lucky to be joined by two people who were at the first march in 1963, Janet and Norm Brown. Janet is a friend and a longtime supporter of D.C. statehood. She was at the march yesterday, and we're excited to have her and Norm with us today. Hi, Janet and Norm, and welcome to our show.
Thank you.
Hello, we're happy to be here.
So what did you think about the march yesterday? How did it compare to the march in 1963? I got an email from you, Janet, saying that you were flooded with memories. Can you tell us some of those memories?
Well, yesterday was a fine day, and it stimulated all kinds of memories of 1963. But the two marches were different in several ways.
Uh-huh. I didn't go yesterday. I was ill, but I was certainly there at the 63 march.
Well, 63 was different just in the approach to the march. Yes. Norman, tell them how we got there.
Well, we lived at that time in Shepherd Park, which was just north of Walter Reed Hospital on 16th mm-hmm. Street. We drove down to somewhere in this neighborhood where we had formerly lived, parked, and proceeded to walk down 17th Street.
With friends from
friends.
Our neighborhood.
Yes. I think we were with a group from what was then called Northwest Neighbors Incorporated. And the streets were absolutely deserted. Absolutely
amazing.
Deserted. When we got to about K Street, we saw National Guardsmen fully equipped with rifles on all four corners of every intersection, starting about K. Obviously, the news media had expected violence, and the military presence showed that expectation. And soon, however, as we began walk further south, we began to see other people walking south. And the further south we got, it began to be crowds. And when we reached the mall, we couldn't believe the size of the crowds that kept coming and coming and coming.
That must have been an incredible feeling.
Yes, it was.
It really was. Nobody knew exactly what to expect. We didn't have any fears or anxiety at all because one of our neighbors, David Apter, who headed a very well-known public relations firm at this time, had stopped work for pay in his business, and he and his staff all worked on the public relations for the march. They worked very closely with Bayard Rustin, and so we didn't have any concerns, but our children were too young. We had to have somebody stay with them. And our African-American housekeeper and babysitter volunteered to babysit because she was not going. She was afraid, given all the violence against civil rights workers in the South at the time, that there would be violence. So she came and stayed with the kids, freeing us to go.
Well, it's very interesting because I was watching C-SPAN yesterday that covered the march, and they were talking about how that the police and that the government and the news media expected a lot of violence and riots.
Yes,
in fact, I think NBC had a helicopter when the reporters up there, they were going to cover the riots, and it never happened. So they mentioned that he went to his house to look at his shingles because they were shocked that there was absolutely no violence in 1963. So it's amazing.
Well, we got there. Everyone was nicely dressed. The people were friendly.
Yeah.
And everyone was chatting with friends and strangers.
Wow.
Yeah,
now,
well.
But it was eerie walking down.
Well,
now, yesterday morning when we walked down with some neighbors from this area, it wasn't eerie at all, but the streets were not full of people nor full of traffic. They never are at 8 o'clock on a Saturday, but August maybe they're particularly empty. We didn't see a whole lot of people until we got down really very close. We were also earlier, you know, than we were in 1963. So,
were there as many crowds? Is there many people there?
Yesterday morning?
Yes.
Yes, by the time we got down to Farragut Square, which is about four blocks from the mall, there were already groups warming up there and having their pre-rally, their rallies before the march. It was quite different. It was already underway very early in the morning. The other thing is, though, that the total crowd yesterday was considerably smaller than in 1963. I'm really sure of that. I think it might have been smaller by half. And there were other differences. Many more young people, young couples with children. There were no children in 1963. It was all adults, and a lot of them, you know, older than Norman and I at the time, and sort of middle-aged, and obviously they're not around any longer. The other difference in the crowd, I think, was that there were many more local groups in proportion to the number of organizations from around the country. There were lots of D.C. people there, I'm sure, but you didn't have the sense, we certainly were not organized and in groups the way the others were who came off their buses from New York and Chicago. I don't remember specifically any Arizonans, but I'm sure there were some because they came from everywhere in the United States.
The other
right.
major difference that I noted, I also watched it yesterday on C-SPAN, was that in 63, the steps of the Lincoln Memorial were jammed with people. And yesterday, when each of the speakers came to the microphone to speak, the steps were deserted. There was nobody sitting on the steps. Neither the speakers, the important people, or visitors. And I couldn't believe it. It just looked as though it was deserted.
If you see the pictures in our newspaper today in the Washington Post, there's a big difference in the view of the whole crowd taken from the top steps of the Lincoln Memorial. Yesterday, there, because it was all fenced off around the reflecting pool, there was like a band of concrete all around all four sides of the reflecting pool. If you look at the pictures from 1963, everybody was right up to the edge of the pool, and as it got hotter and hotter later in the day, many of them took off their shoes and socks and rolled up their pants or their skirts and put their legs in the water. I mean, there was none of that because we were all held back from the way the reflecting pool yesterday.
Yeah, you know, I noticed that we had pre-rally and some other things going on, and that I think maybe some people were discouraged by the fact that they had fenced off the whole mall, and I don't think that's because they really expected any trouble from the people that were attending, but you know, since 9/11, it seems that they put on all these additional restrictions, and it was difficult if you didn't come in at the right place, if you didn't know exactly where you were going. It was
difficult. That's so true.
Yeah, difficult to get onto the mall, and we had people at a pre-rally, and people were trying to get through where our rally was, and the police that were there were saying, no, you got to go up to 17th Street, which was five or six blocks away. So we had a lot of elderly people, I think, that didn't even come to our rally because they were worried about having to get them to walk the extra six blocks back just to get to the mall. And
that was the only negative feeling that I had about the whole march yesterday. I mean, every other encounter was very positive. But those fences that the Park Service put up were formidable. I mean, they were over 6 feet high, chain link on either side of the paths, which were wide enough to take, some of them were wide enough to take six or eight people, some of them maybe 8 to 10 people, but nevertheless, we moved very, very slowly. And we got directed by an official to the D.C. statehood rally that Michael is referring to. We got sent off in the wrong direction, and we found ourselves 100 yards from the rally, which we could see but couldn't get to. One of the younger people with our little party just opened the fence by lifting one of the sections, and we went across and did the same on the other side. By that time, some officials had reached the spot and said, you can't come in here. But we did, and we were just pleasant and went on. But being herded in these narrow places, and herding was what it felt like. There was nothing like that in 1963. People just moved in, and as the people came behind them with more and more pressure, they moved closer, and we were all standing or sitting right absolutely next to each other. And that's how we met the people from New York and Chicago and Minnesota and California that day, and talked to people. It was really because it was so open. And I don't know whether this was, you know, a national security arrangement, or whether it was just that they were worried about the grass, which is entirely possible.
Well,
you know,
it was the only negative note in the entire day, which was otherwise very exciting.
You know what I noticed, and I really like to know if you noticed this too. there seemed to be a lot. The original march was on was about jobs and freedom. We know, and in reality, it was really about the civil rights of African Americans. But yesterday, of course, was about jobs and freedom too. But it seemed that there were a lot of other, a broader range of issues, from statehood for the district to economic justice to Trayvon Martin. It seemed there were a lot of peripheral issues as well. Was that the same in 63, or did people seem more directed towards a single purpose?
I don't think that. I think we were all so aware of the escalation of action and counteraction by, you know, and violence in the South that we were all just concentrating on getting the Civil Rights Act through Congress and getting the federal government to enforce the rights that the Southern African Americans were, and elsewhere around the country, were prevented from having. So, I don't think there was. But I had I observed two different sets of people who were much more emotionally involved, more angry, less content with where we were, and they were the first rally that we saw was in Farragut Square, as I said, where there was a group that was organizing that was against racism. And later on, my daughter and I, who was with us on the march today, got into a conversation with an elderly D.C. resident who'd been with that group, and he was decrying the racism that still pervades the society at a very deep level. The roots are just hard to pull out, and he was feeling very much in his own life as though racism still made a huge difference. But the biggest group that I remember seeing as we walked around one end of the of the monuments and then back in the other direction later for the speeches in the afternoon, the biggest group, obviously, in that category of being still angry and upset was the group that was marching with Trayvon Martin signs and demanding the failure of the courts to achieve justice in his case must be overturned. They were really numerous. They were young and they were angry. Now that doesn't mean that they weren't, you know, perfectly easy to talk to. They were eager to talk, as we all were, to each other. But those two groups stood out because they weren't sort of celebrating in the same way of how much we had accomplished in 50 years in this country. And none of us, of course, would have believed then, or even, well, I had trouble believing even 50 years ago that we could possibly have had elected an African-American president in 2008.
Well, you know, I worked on Reverend Jesse Jackson's original campaign for president. I was his direct mail consultant. And if you had asked me back in 1988, if you said to me that 20 years later we were going to have an African-American president, I would have thought you were crazy. Even 20 years ago.
Well, I didn't believe until election night.
Yeah.
Well, let me ask you all. I mean, it's hard. I've always been involved in D.C. and always went to the marches. And I remember, I can't remember what the issue was, but it was a huge crowd that I went to when I was in college. And we all moved, like you said. There were no barriers. And now I hate to think of it, you know, still our park, but that they try to herd you like that, and it's taken so much away from how much access people had to D.C., to their nation's capital. I mean, remember having picnics right in front of the Capitol, you know, when I would go for lunch when I would be working in for Congresswoman Schroeder. But let me ask you,
I mean... You can still do that.
Can you still do that right on the lawn,
yeah,
right
I
on
bet.
The grass? Okay, good, good.
I mean, you'd have your identification with you for one thing.
Yeah, and there'd be people watching you.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes. There's lots of observations.
People or cameras.
Yeah.
Right. Now, I know that the original march was a turning point for the fight for civil rights, and it led to the passage of the 1964 Civil Rights Act and the 1965 Voting Rights Act. Now, do you think politicians looked at this march with any kind of, I mean, do you think it's possible it might have an impact on the political gridlock to BC today, or?
No.
No, huh?
Well, we're not, people who, our friends who live around the country often say, Janet, Norman, you know, what's happening in Washington? Give us the scoop on such and such. And we don't have any scoop just because we live here. We have the same media as all the rest of you around the country. But, in fact, there is... I was encouraged yesterday because the crowd was big. The real issue was voting rights. It wasn't just to get the vote and get African Americans registered who'd not been allowed to do so before under threat of terrific violence. It was an expression of profound disappointment yesterday with the Supreme Court's interpretation of the Voting Rights Act and with the action around the country in state legislatures, not in the national Congress is gridlocked like on this issue as everything else, but it was a real concern yesterday about what states were doing and trying to make it harder to register. All of my political life, we've always been getting our polling places freer and easier to reach and getting access to more and more people and increasing registration of all kinds of citizens. And that was the sort of setbacks that we've seen in recent months on that issue was very disappointing to people in this crowd. And that goes for all the major speakers as well as the people on the ground.
I have a question for the three of you because I didn't go to the march yesterday. But did any of you see any signs urging the overturning of the Citizens United decision by the court?
No.
No, I didn't either. Yeah, I didn't.
No.
And what was that decision?
Now, most of the placards, without any question, you can see it on television, too, by the color, was the voting rights cardboard signs that so many people were carrying. They said, you know, they said voting rights, and they meant the current trend endangering those voting rights for poor people, for minorities of all kinds, not just, you know, Southerners in certain selected states. So, it was the issue, and there was clearly disappointment and distress expressed around the damage done in recent months to the Voting Rights Act.
Well, you know, Kathleen and I have done a show on that, and we'll probably do more on that, and maybe we can have you back. But I have to ask you this question, Janet, because you've been involved in our struggle for so long here in the District of Columbia, and you know that yesterday we had a rally at the World War One Memorial, where we talked about statehood, but we can't seem to get people on the national stage to talk about this. They come to Washington, they understand that we don't have the same rights as anybody else. They understand that this is so basic to our democracy. It stands in opposition to almost everything we hold dear as Americans. Why do you think it is, Janet, that we can't get people to talk about this nationally?
Well, you know, I disagree with you, Michael, in thinking that people around the country know about it. I think, Norman, in my experience, is that people don't think that we're denied the vote.
Well, you're misunderstanding me. I
think most probably don't think of it at all. I'm certain our friends do because I chase them on the subject.
But, I'm sure you do. But that's
Washington
not what I'm asking.
Gets covered by the press all over the country, by the media, just the press.
But that's not what I'm asking, Janet. I understand that people in America, 80% of them actually, think we have the same rights everybody else does.
Yeah.
I'm asking why Al Sharpton doesn't stand up there and why Martin Luther King...
Oh, but Al Sharpton was nevertheless my favorite speaker yesterday.
Yes.
You know, because, we'll get back to him in a minute. But, you know, we were, I don't know who assigned the meeting spaces for the rallies yesterday morning, but we were well off to the side. It was, as you said, very hard to get to. I'm 82 and pretty sturdy.
Pretty sturdy, yes, you are.
I was worn out before the middle of the day, and I did not stay for all the speeches. I came back home and watched them on television. It was hard to get to. And then when we did join with all our signs and red T-shirts, we marched with a lot of other groups from the district. There were church groups that were rallying. There were the local statehood people. Our local officials yesterday did a fine job, better than they've ever done as a group, in terms of speaking out at the rally for statehood. But once we got into the march afterwards, it was a kind of sloppy march. It was, the groups just sort of fell in, the rest of them. We didn't have anywhere near enough statehood signs. And most of our statehood people got lost in the crowd. Now, my daughter and a friend of hers stayed until the bitter end and handed out hundreds and hundreds of leaflets and talked to people from other states. And as always, they got a very good reception. People are shocked. Mm-hmm. The other thing that has not been made well known here, even in the city, is that we have two bills in the Congress right now, called the New Columbia Admissions Act, that would take all the residential and commercial parts of the city out of the District of Columbia and create a state. And that can be done by a very simple majority of Congress. That's the method by which the last 37 states to get admission, which includes Arizona, got admitted to the union. And that's what we're working for. Well, there's a bill in the Senate, and there's a bill in the House, and we're working very hard to get co-sponsors from that. We have very strong leadership from the Senate and the House, and we've got dozens and dozens of co-sponsors now. We do hope to have a hearing in the fall, but we need
like
a lot
October.
More co-sponsors before then. And it's not easy for those of us who live here and have jobs to get down to Congress and lobby for that legislation, but we do. We had a lobby day in April that brought dozens and dozens of activists and visited dozens of offices. And we need to do more of that, and we will do more of that all fall as soon as the congressmen get back. For the most part, we get a very positive hearing, and for the most part, if you keep after them, because it's not high on anybody else's agenda.
Right.
And we need to really make it high on everybody else's agenda. And to do that, we've got to have everybody in the District of Columbia outraged.
That's right.
You know, there's lots to be outraged about as far as just living in this city. It's a beautiful city. We're proud of it. We have more citizens living here than we have than there are in the state of Wyoming or the state of Vermont. And we're very close to four other states, to Alaska, to South Dakota, and North Dakota. And we're growing faster than Vermont, and we're growing faster than South Dakota. But we haven't got a statehood yet, and we cannot, we're not represented with full voting rights in the Senate and the House. The only way to do that is through statehood.
You're absolutely right.
It's a hard, it's uphill. I'm more encouraged now than I have been at any time since been working on this. I think it's really hopeful that we've got the co-sponsors we have, and we're going to, we have a year and a half, basically, to get the rest and get a vote. I don't think we're likely to get it in this particular Congress because the debacle there is not of our making and not, you know, can't be changed by it.
Well, let me just ask
you. I wish Al Sharpton had, and I'm sending him a letter, and I'll urge other people to also.
Well, Janet, let me ask you and Norm, I mean, you guys are in your 80s and you sound like you're in your 60s or 50s. You sound so young, both of you.
Well, Norm is going to be 90 this fall, and I'm 82.
Oh, my gosh. Well, how do you feel? I mean, you've seen a lot in the years that you've lived, and I gather, am I right in saying that you seem to be very optimistic on where the society is going and where we're going as a nation? Do you feel that?
Yes. I was astonished and pleased that this nation could, by a very clear majority, elect an African American president, and I'm really pleased that there is a new generation coming along for whom living next to marrying a person of a different race or background is much, much more routine than it was in our generation. I just think there's been so much improvement. The same-sex marriage issue has gained in support from primarily that younger generation of voters. And that's where our hope lies. I think they're basically on the right track. There just aren't any, or certainly aren't very many, 30-year-olds in the Congress who are bucking that trend.
Right.
So I really am hopeful, and I was pleased that Al Sharpton, in describing the stages through which we'd come, and he talked about white domination in 63, he said white men, and he didn't say white women, or just white people. So, I mean, he has accepted the fact that there's discrimination against women as well. There were many more women on the program yesterday than there were in 1963, though not enough because, well, but that partly also is a generational thing. You know,
yes.
The people who spoke yesterday are not under 30 for the most part. I don't think there was anybody who was under 30 or even in their 30s. So I have great hope that the younger generation is definitely moving in the right direction. But some issues are more urgent than others, and we cannot stand for rolling back the voters' rights that were achieved as a result of the 1963 fight for them and vote for the civil rights movement actions all across the country.
I want to echo Janet's comment about Al Sharpton, but I also want to say how pleased I was with John Lewis. He's been one of my heroes for a long time, and his speech yesterday I thought was excellent.
Yes, yep. A lot of people have commented on that, Norm, and I agree with you 100%. He's also one of my heroes.
Yeah. And he's such a nice guy.
Yeah, he is a nice guy, and you know, and he's just worked so hard, and he always, when he speaks locally to us, he always says the right things about statehood, too. He's been a strong supporter.
He's a co-sponsor of the legislation in the House.
Yes, he is. Yes, and we do have some powerful allies in the Senate. You're right. The leader of the Senate is a co-sponsor, and both senators from Maryland are co-sponsors, and we're working on the senators from Virginia.
Even though they stand to lose something, you know.
That's right, they do.
We are not allowed in the District of Columbia to collect taxes where the people work, as they are in every other state in the union. If you work in New York City, but you live in North Jersey or you live in Connecticut and commute every day, you still pay taxes in New York City.
Income
taxes. And here, we can't do that. We're just, every time we've tried, somebody in Congress has prevented it. Because every law that we pass here in the district has to be approved by the Congress of the United States.
Well, that's right. And that's compounded. That problem is compounded by the fact that 70% of the people that work in this city do not live in this city.
That's right. And it costs us more than $2 billion a year on average. It's the District of Columbia. Some people think it's being subsidized by the federal government, which is just not true. But we do, in fact, subsidize the state governments of Maryland and Virginia.
Yep.
That's why it's so nice to know that the congressional representatives in the House from Maryland and the two senators from the House in Maryland have co-signed the legislation for statehood.
That's right.
Because they recognize that it's right.
That's right.
And that this is a basic civil right that needs to be addressed. I'm hopeful.
Good.
I don't think you can keep working if you aren't hopeful.
That's right. That's right. Well, you know, we're going to go take a short break and ask people to call in, but I want to thank you, Janet and Norm Brown. We hope that you'll come back and join the conversation again. When Janet says that she's relatively mobile at 82, it's such an understatement. I have a video of this woman putting up signs in January when Obama was first inaugurated, pronouncing that, yes, we can have statehood in the District of Columbia. So thank you. We're gonna take a break now. I hope you call in. The number is 888-429-5471. And thank you again, Janet and Norm. We're gonna play a song, which I dedicate to Janet and Norm and all those people that have been working to make this a better, place to live. I think it epitomizes the spirit of the march in 63 and the commemoration thereof. And this goes out to you, Janet and Norm. It's from 1963. It's Sam Cooke, A Change Is Gonna Come. Back in a few minutes.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
In a little tent, oh, and just like the river, I've been running ever since.
Thanks for joining us, and we hope you'll call in, because this is an important subject, and it's something that Kathleen and I know both feel deeply about. Now, Kathleen has never treated me equally, but that's okay. I've learned to live with that.
Well, there are some who deserve it, and some who you got to work for it, Michael. You got to prove yourself. Yeah. We know you're just a guy. We know you're just an Italian guy from New Jersey.
Yeah.
So you got a couple of things going against you. Italian and New Jersey.
I was growing up, Italian guys from New Jersey were respected. Because if you didn't, who knows where you would have ended up.
You lost that.
We're going to get calls from Italians all over America.
You lost that when you moved to D.C.
Yeah.
That's all my rights. That's right. Like I tease you, just become a milquetoast. But I want to bring this up, because I was sitting here. I have not met Norm or I'm sorry, what was the lady's name?
Janet.
Janet, I have never met them, and they sounded so eloquent and so educated. Now, it was interesting because I was sitting here wondering if they were African American or, what kind of nationality were they? Because that's what's so great about radio, and it's since why I like The Voice so much, because you don't judge or you can't see the person, so you just have to listen to the words they say. But I bet you that a good portion of our audience who were listening probably felt that they were African American, were they?
No, they're both white people who have been involved in social justice issues. Well, you heard Janet, she was a young mother when she came down there 50 years ago, and she and Norm were involved, and they're still involved. As I said just before the break, I have a video that some newsman took. We put up 8,500 signs when Obama got inaugurated. We put up 8,500 signs saying statehood, yes, we can, to publicize our plight. And Janet was interviewed in the middle of, at the beginning of January, just before the inauguration, when it was really cold outside. And there she was, all bundled up, climbing up a phone pole, putting up these signs. So these people are very active. But yes, they're both white. And
is that what you call people now that are not like Hispanic? Or I mean, is that it's just funny I think about it, because you don't call Hispanics brown people. You don't call African American black people anymore.
Right.
But we call what? I guess the white population is kind of interesting. But I had to ask you, Mike, that during the break, because I was very curious, because I wouldn't have known. I would have assumed that they were, but they just sounded so great. And wow, to have been there 50 years later, it must have been something.
Yeah. You know what? I mean, Janet said it about the speeches yesterday about, that they're really, even though they like John Lewis' speech, that there really weren't the speakers that they had in 1963. And that was absolutely true. I mean, I certainly didn't hear anything that got close to the I Have a Dream speech. We had a rally on statehood, and I did a speech, and of course I based it on Dr. King's famous speech because it's so poignant. I mean, you could have given exactly the same speech today about the situation in Washington, D.C., and it would have fit perfectly. And I had a hard time, because I only had a few minutes to speak, picking the right quotes from the speech, because there were so many great quotes from the speech that applied, injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere, the fierce urgency of now, we've come to cash a check, a promissory note, drawn on the bank of justice and guaranteed by the Constitution and Declaration of Independence. It really fit our situation, very well. And what an amazing speech and what an amazing experience for me. I went to a reception at the Willard Hotel.
That's such a pretty hotel.
On Friday. And it's also where Martin Luther King stayed to put the final touches on his speech, and there were lots of people there that had been in 63, and it was just an amazing experience. I encourage all of you to come to Washington. If you're out there and you haven't seen Dr. King's Memorial, or you haven't been here to see the Holocaust Museum or the African American Civil War Museum or any of the Smithsonian Museum.
The Native Indian Museum. America. That's a beautiful one. I mean, but there, just to go see the Constitution and see, you know, the Lincoln Memorial, the Washington Memorial, and the Jefferson Memorial. If you see just those three things or four things, you really get a feel for what this country is and what we stood for and what we do stand for and why. And it's because of those principles that we are the greatest country, and we can overcome anything together. But we have to talk to each other. We have to have respect for one another and stop this bipartisanship where, you know, there's these lines drawn and nobody can get even near to cross over and shake anyone's hand. That's got to stop. And you know, I feel that there's a movement among the people, but I just don't understand why it doesn't get across to our congressional representatives. And not having statehood for D.C. is just one of those other things that, you know, you still have a long way to go, because I know you guys have more population than quite a few states, and it's just not right to deny you guys your vote and the ability to pass your own laws.
Well, you know, and you're absolutely right about the cooperation thing. I mean, there is a certain amount of cooperation, even though our system is kind of an adversarial system, there is a certain amount of cooperation that's required to move things forward, and that's what we've really lost. And I suggest maybe you and I could put a fund together, Kathleen, to bring members of Congress and show them the Constitution, because I think there's a lot of them that have never read it. I mean, they like to talk about it all the time, but they haven't read it. Look, we have a caller on line one. Maybe we could talk to her. Ann, are you there?
Yes.
Yeah. Hi. Do you have a question or a comment you want to make?
More a comment. You were talking about coming to visit the District of Columbia in Washington, D.C., the Federal Washington, and all the beautiful monuments and memorials. I just find it interesting that so many Americans, you know, have this postcard view of their national capital, but really know very little about it. And, in fact, know very little about the city. And there, you hear the term Washington always taken in vain, I think, a lot by the media and by others saying about what's going on here.
Yeah.
And they're not talking about the 640,000 plus of us who live here. They're talking about the 536 that are elected nationally, whether it's Congress or the president, really, and what they're doing or not doing and whether they like it or they don't like it. And first of all, I would encourage people to come and see the real neighborhoods and the real city, which is much bigger and has an absolutely fascinating history. A lot of things that happened nationally, but it has other things that happened locally that have had an incredible effect on what happened nationally, but it has to do with the people who have lived in the city for the last 213 years. And the other thing is that they often don't realize that those of us who live here are not their equals and don't have the same rights that they do. And
yes,
in fact, when you're talking about the March on Washington and particular Martin Luther King's speech, that they don't really understand that he understood, and as part of his dream of equal rights, that the District of Columbia was substantially different than the rest of the country. where people had rights but were having their rights, exercise of their rights denied them. But we didn't even we don't even have the rights even now in the first place.
Well, you make a great point, Anne, that, that Washington is not just the monuments and the stuff you see on the postcards. We really do have a rich, diverse culture, great music, some you know, from Marvin Gaye to Roberta Flack to lots of other people, art, history, culture, great food. Yeah, there's a lot in Washington, D.C. that goes beyond the federal enclave, and maybe when we become the state of New Columbia, which will happen any day now, I'm sure, we'll be able to attract more tourists to some of those areas. But Washington is a wonderful place to live. It's been a great place to raise children. Kathleen lived here
for a long time. I lived in Adams Morgan, and I'll tell you, of all the places I went to, I was in Adams Morgan. I went to Columbia and 18th Street and saw this little restaurant called Mestec.
Still
and
there.
It's still there.
Yeah.
And they had chorizo like my grandmother made, not the chorizo from Spain, the chorizo, the Mexican chorizo you get on the border, and the good tortillas. I remember just having this feeling like, oh my gosh, I'm home. And I think I talked to them for about 2 hours because they spoke, I don't know how to say this, they spoke Mexican to me instead of Puerto Rican or Cuban. So it's a great wealth of culture and food and so many diverse people. It's like New York City to me in many ways because you have people from everywhere. I had Ethiopian food for the first time in my life, and we could go on and on. It's just
and you can get good
place.
Cuban food and good Puerto Rican food as well.
Yes.
You can get all those cuisines in Washington and then some. Well, you know, we're almost out of time here.
Thank you, Bonnie.
Thanks, Ann. We have Bonnie online too. You want to make a quick comment, Bonnie? Are you there? Bonnie?
She got off.
I think we lost her. Well, maybe she'll call in again next week. But Kathleen, thanks for being with us again. I hope you guys will join us next week. We're going to have a country singing sensation named Josie Milner, who works with a nationwide nonprofit, Angels and Doves, that helps prevent bullying and teen suicide. And we thought that would be a good way to start the school year.
Yeah,
so.
And I know we were talking about this because a friend of my son, I was fooling around and I did that dance, Gangnam, whatever, you know, that North Korean song, whatever, around, and they filmed me on their phone, and we're going to put it on Facebook. And I had to pounce on them and give them the, you know, I am the A-dog thing, give me your phone, because I did it for the people there, but I do not want that to go on to the internet or Facebook. And this is the kind of thing that I think is going to be very interesting next week. How in this society of everyone just taking pictures, you don't even know who's taking a picture, and it might not even be you, they might doctor it, how this all is impacting our society.
Yes.
So it's going to be very interesting, because let me tell you, I was furious when they did that, and it was, you know, I think you have to ask people before you can film them.
Yes.
So anyway, wow. I'm very intrigued about this conversation next Sunday.
Well, good, and I hope other people enjoy us. And let me tell you, Diego and Mateo, that was wrong, but I'm willing to pay you $50 if you can get me a copy of that video.
Hey, listen.
All right. On that note, let's thank you. Thank you for tuning in, and we hope you'll tune in next week.
Hey, give me $100, and I'll give it to you.
I'll give you $100 for it.
Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote.